to Movie Night with your hosts, Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly.
Hey, boys and girls, welcome to the Movie Night Podcast. I am Dwayne Perkins, joined as always by my hilarious co-host, TK Kelly. Each week, we watch a movie, we have a guest, they watch the movie, and we meet here to discuss.
It's a simple formula. We stick to it, guys. Episode 274. We're not changing now. Word. Our guest this week is a super funny writer who I know from when I first came to LA. Always been really cool to me. You know him from Conan and The Daily Show. Rob Kuttner, what is up?
Woo!
How's it going, man?
Good. Good to see you.
You too. Thanks so much for coming. This is great. It's been way too long.
I know.
I was but a wee intern when we met.
I'm used to having you like work for me for free.
So. Yeah. I was in the kitchen writing monologue joke setups for a year. it was a good time though.
I mean, harvest the interns for news.
Yes. Like. Yeah. Exactly. We had to look up all the insane stories and write the setup to the monologue jokes, and then we'd bring them to these guys, and they would pump out 1,000 jokes a day or something.
As you know now, Tosh, it's a volume business. You just have to have so many.
Everyone write 1,000 jokes and we'll use 3.
Right. That's amazing. What's great about that is that you have to set them up to write those jokes. So the better the setup, the more
listen,
you can.
You guys had to take a grueling test, right? Did you have to take the test?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Only very few are chosen.
You couldn't get, not just any intern got that internship. It was like you had to do the job and prove you could do it.
Right,
and
we would have
three people got it.
Because you kind of have to just put the right amount of information and just be really concise and clear and just like have an eye for like what's going to be funny and what's going to be useful for the writers. We would get like some of the ones who would try out for the monologue test, and it would be like, they would have a paragraph long dissertation.
Yeah.
Or they would like use all these, dependent clauses or just really just copy and paste the headline. And you could just tell, it's like, that's not going to be helpful to us at all. I could have just looked it up myself.
I knew, I felt like I had an edge there because I had watched so much Conan growing up and I just understood what a monologue setup was supposed to sound like. I was like, yeah, I can do that. That'll be fine. Right. But, yeah, there were some bitter folks who didn't get that one, guys. Some general interns who had to get a lot of coffee. But it was great. And how long were you there, man?
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah.
And monologue the whole time, right?
Monologue, and then you can pitch sketch and video pieces, and if they greenlight it, then you get to go make it. But mostly monologue. That's the bread and butter.
Yeah. Right. What was that like? I mean, to do that for 9 years, how far in were you ready to transition out of that? Like, that's grueling, man. That's like the hardest. Monologue joke writing is just, it's volume. Like you said, it's tons.
I was into it. You know, when you hit a groove, you do it. I will say, like, honestly, November 2016, it suddenly like, country felt different.
Yeah, for sure.
People felt different.
What happened in November?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Well, it was Thanksgiving. Right. People just were feeling differently about comedy and humor, and people were just tense and grim, and everyone was just hyper partisan, and so like Conan is not one of the most political talk shows. So you take like a Daily Show, which I used to work for, and the audience is like whipped up into a frenzy by the host, who all agree with him and ready to board the mothership with him.
Yeah.
Kill themselves in a moment's notice. So, a show like Conan or one of the other ones, like it's a more widespread audience and he doesn't go political as much. So like, we're not going to get political, but then everything's political.
Yeah. Every headline is about him. Right. So how do you,
and everything leads back to Trump somehow.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And it felt like what maybe you could speak to this. It feels like now it's hard to make a joke about Trump and not be thought of as anti-Trump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you should be able to
can't
do
we
a
all
joke
just agree
him.
He's fucking ridiculous? Like,
that's right. Even Obama was a little bit seem hands off because it was like, the first black president. But like the days where you could just make fun of a guy, it didn't mean you hated him, didn't mean you loved him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Obama was kind of the opposite problem, although I'll take it, because he was just sort of, forgive this expression, he was sort of a comedy black hole, because he would just sort of suck all the kind of like mirth and like whimsy out of it, because he was so earnest and serious and like dedicated. Thank God for Joe Biden. I'll just say it.
So we still got this guy over here.
If you have an Obama joke, it always goes to Joe Biden. That's where it ends up. Meanwhile, Joe Biden said,
The punchline of Obama jokes was like, but he's too cool for it. Like, he's not easy to make fun of.
He's a fucking great comedian, too.
Yeah.
Like, when the people did the White House Correspondents' Dinner after him, it's like, follow this. He, like, goes in and drops the mic, and, like, no one is as funny or cool as he is. So, like, you can't win because he's not funny, and also he's too funny. So
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, that means, like, what are you talking about? Just, it must be, I mean, like, so what was the solution in terms of writing the monologue for the last few years?
You know, I think sometimes we would just go a little bit deeper into the stories and just try to find, like, little details and stuff to hinge it on and that sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, I will say the good thing about Trump is he has so many layers of awfulness that you can always find some different, like, riff right. on him. Like,
yeah.
You know, you only have a few things you can say about Biden or, you know, George W. Bush or something like that. But, you know, there's so many angles. He's like a multifaceted diamond.
Yeah, he's a stinky onion. You keep peeling those layers. It keeps getting worse.
And he makes people cry.
Yes.
And Conan's not super political, but did you still get any kind of, like, backlash? Did people say, shouldn't have done that joke or this joke or anything like
I think
that?
We were shielded from that, fortunately. I think, you know, there was, like, a lot of letters that came in, and we just didn't hear about it, stuff like that. TBS is really cool and kind of hands off, so they didn't really
care. They kind of let you, like, they, I feel like they let that show do its thing.
That's
it
right.
It was just like,
that's right.
Just right. Do what you do.
They're happy to let it do. So I don't think, I mean, I think you're just going to get that anyway. But I mean, and also compare him to the other guys. Like, he's not nearly as political as anyone, so probably he's not grabby as much attention.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what's been going on lately? I know you've been working on some of your own stuff.
Yeah, so I'm going out and pitching some shows that I've been working on creating for a while. I'm hoping to create an animated show, which I'll hopefully be able to tell you about soon. I'm writing a show that's going to be on YouTube that's like a satirical. It's sort of like a little bit like a John Oliver show, but takes on like one topic at a time, and it's going to be on YouTube. It's a brand new thing that this guy and I are just doing together, who I worked with before, and it's a blast, and we're getting some really cool comedians, and that's going to come out in October. So
nice.
I'll give you the details on that.
Awesome.
So that's been fun.
Where can people?
It's going to be available on YouTube.
YouTube, right? But like, so can we tell them what it's called yet? Or
it's called Gander.
That's Gander.
I can tell you.
Okay.
And I'll be posting about it on social media going forward, and you know, once we have a channel, I guess I'll give you guys the exact, you know, place to point it to. But just look
definitely.
Out for Gander, and some of our comedians are going to start spreading the word, and so hopefully you guys will hear about it. Not from me.
Will it have its own account, or is it on a certain channel on YouTube?
I think it's going to have its own YouTube channel, because we're going to have a whole bunch of content that's going to come out along with it. It's going to be a thing.
How is that, like, how much are you enjoying now getting to work on your own thing after writing for The Daily Show and Conan and other people's voices for so long?
You have to work for terrible people like Jon Stewart and Conan.
Just the worst in the business. Garbage people.
You know, it's like...
Yeah, you've had, like, the best gigs so far.
These have been
man.
Great people. And I worked for Dennis... The first guy I worked for was Dennis Miller before he was, like... right wing when he was like kind of centrist, and he was like my idol, comedy idol growing up. Like his Off-White album was just like
he took a killer. Turn huh
yeah but I started out with him and he gave my first gig, so he's been good to me. So I work for good guys, but like you are ultimately writing for someone else's voice,
right,
you know?
Right.
You know, you're someone else's dummy or ventriloquist or whatever. I don't know who's the dummy. I guess I'm the dummy, but it's funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're paying you, but they're the dummy. I don't know. So, you know, that's fun and it's great to do it, but then also you have your own ideas and your own craziness and you want to get out there in the world. So it's good to do that. It's good to get that off. It's either that or expose my family to it.
You know? Yeah.
My therapist.
Right.
Well, I'll just write a cartoon about it.
Exactly.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and that muscle is so strong. I mean, it feels like if you wanted to dive back into that world on some level, you could land somewhere, right?
Yeah, I've got the street skills, I got the cred, if I want to, and there's a lot of shows doing that. But I think right now I'm enjoying, you know, using some different muscles.
Yeah, maybe doing late night for a long time is I mean, that's I think the hardest job in Hollywood as
maybe
far as comedy
world.
Writers.
The world.
That's the hardest job in the world. First it's monologue writer, then it's at home mother. I just feel like the volume of shows that you have to put out, like to put out multiple shows in 1 week is always that's crazy to me. Like the little time I spent at Conan, just seeing how it never stopped going was like,
yeah, it's a bit like the I Love Lucy with like the things coming down the factory, conveyor belt line, and it's like, what am I going to stuff in my shirt?
Yeah, exactly. You have to pump out material every day, and right. That's, I mean, making a weekly show is a ton.
Right.
But
I mean, fortunately, like you have to do it with a couple other people, And if you have a bad day, you'll have a good day the next day, and someone else will pick up the slack. So, and you know, if it's just one person doing it, that would be,
yeah,
that would be a little bit insane. But yeah, you know, you kind of get into a rhythm, and you're like, okay, big picture, you know, I'll have some good days, I'll have some bad days, and
yeah,
it'll get done.
It's just such a, like, you know, it never stops coming, and the news never stops coming, yeah, and the it's,
well, isn't that what everybody feels like nowadays, whether you write jokes about it or not,
just being crushed by a never-ending avalanche of news.
A bit, but you know what I do sometimes, and I'm not really happy or proud of this, is I just shut off because I can't,
yeah,
keep
yeah
up, you know, like like I, most things that happen, I'm like, what is everyone on Twitter talking about? Then I go and see the yeah news story after the fact. So
yeah, you don't seek out the news.
Right. Yeah, you guess you can't really completely shut it off.
No, there is no shutting it off. Right. It's, I mean, I'm sort of similar, Dwayne. I try to avoid seeking it out. And when the big stories happen, inevitably you hear about exactly them and you get there. Exactly. But like, it's just, it's the nonstop coverage of everything is like, I can't devote time to this. I have no energy left for this shit 24/7. It's too much.
I mean, I feel a little bit bad for like the people in the 24-hour media, because it's like they have to like run with everything, even though they know it's like, oh great, oh, yeah, you tweeted again.
Yeah.
Oh great, someone said something stupid, you know.
They have to blow everything up into a story, and it's
like,
they have
to get ratings, they have to make everything into clickbait, and it's just like, I'm sure they're not like digging it either. This isn't what I went to journalism school
for. Yeah, I feel like they do it for 3 years and just completely burn out. It's insane. Or their newspaper
gets, you know, gets canceled.
Yeah. Let's get into this movie.
Yeah, there's no transition to this one.
Yeah, there's no Dwayne usually tries to do like a clever segue, but this title's one of the harder ones. I don't know how you'd segue into this one, Dwayne.
You could segue into like the subject matter, but not the
exactly
the title.
Let's just get into the movie. This is actually, accidentally, we're doing two back-to-back weeks of Robert Redford thrillers.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we haven't done enough of them. So now we're just going to transition to an all Robert Redford thriller podcast. That's what we're doing, guys. Our movie this week is from 19...
a podcast like that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Definitely.
It could last a while.
It's called Redcast. You know?
our movie is from 1975. It's called 3 Days of the Condor, directed by Sidney Pollack, starring Robert Redford, Faye Dunaway, Cliff Robertson, and Max von Sydow. What did we think of this movie?
Yeah, you can jump in.
Oh, well, first of all, it was one of these movies I've been meaning to see for a long time. It's just on the
You had never seen it before.
Yeah, I hadn't. And I tried to see a lot of classic movies.
Yeah.
And this is like, it was a great excuse to see it. And my wife and I had a great date night. We both had a great time seeing it. It's a really solid thriller. It's not even like cheesy in the way that I think some thrillers are nowadays,
where yeah
it's like, it's not, it's dramatic, but it's not melodramatic, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, yeah,
the action and the tension is all earned, and it's not like people overreacting to stuff, and
it
like,
all, yeah, it feels very genuine throughout. They don't artificially heighten anything, really. It's a 70s movie, so it's much more subdued. It's right, much right more
some
just
of those,
like
some of those were a little hysterical, got a little crazy, like Parallax View, and some of those like, you know, into crazy town and stuff. But this one was like, it was really lean and taut, and it moves along fast. Like there's a lot of talking and stuff, but like it just moves on. You're like, wow, this movie just is like almost over, and it's just been nonstop story.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit in the Hitchcock mold, which I like.
Definitely feels Hitchcock-like. Too.
Like it's like a guy, kind of an innocent guy.
Yeah. Regular guy.
Trying to figure it out.
Right. Know? Right. Yeah. Like nowadays it would be like Liam Neeson kicking ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Running around. What's happening?
Yeah, yeah. There'd be a car chase, and like this is so.
Who did they take now?
They've taken everyone from me.
Your credit card. Right? Just go ask for it.
No, actually, I just left that. I left that at Applebee's. I gotta go get it. This is very much that like everyday guy thrust into an insane situation, and it's always fun to watch because you think about like what would you do in that situation. Right. This guy is not built for this. He was in the military, but he was like communications, and he literally reads books for the CIA. Yeah, like it's
like
not
a military nerd.
Yeah, he's a professional military nerd, and he comes back from lunch and everyone is murdered.
You know,
man, this movie, like if you didn't know the plot of this movie,
you know, for some people,
10 minutes in, you're like, holy shit.
I have to say, for some people, that might be like a happy ending, though. That might be like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. It's like Home Alone. I wished it, and they all died. Right.
Problem solved.
But like... No, I really enjoyed this movie. And what's crazy is the movie we did last week, it's like
we did sneakers last week.
Yeah, goes when Robert Redford is in the movie, if he goes to get food,
yes,
that shit happens to the people who stay behind.
That's
keep
funny.
Him fed.
That's really funny.
It's like Freddy Krueger. Like,
yes, in sneakers, he leaves to get pizza, and his buddy gets arrested, and his life gets ruined. And this, he goes out to get everybody lunch, and they all get murdered.
They all get murdered. Right. And what I like about the movie is that they did a great job. It's this perfect marriage of writing and storytelling and the directing, because you a movie like this, you could easily like get lost. And, wait, who was that guy? And,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of names, there's a lot of information. Yes, yeah. But it was easy to follow, which is crazy.
And it's also almost like it's that perfect thing where like that for me makes or breaks a thriller. Where if the story is too hard to follow, especially spy thrillers, you can get really bogged down in like, wait, now who's behind it and what's it really about and whatever.
They do that. I feel like they do a little bit of that and it's on purpose.
Yeah.
Like they confuse you a little
bit. It almost doesn't matter. It's like almost irrelevant. If you think about the details too much, it's really like in the end, it all wraps up and comes together and it's fairly simple. Right. It's just,
when you're confused,
it's like oil. Of course it's fucking oil. It's always oil.
But when you're confused, it's like because the director and the writer want you to be confused.
He's confused. Exactly. Yes, he's confused, like, and you're feeling that with him. Like, he's in this panic mode. He doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Versus, like, I don't know if you guys have seen Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, like that John le Carré, like, I think it's also from the 70s. Or,
yeah, the original, right?
Yeah, and that's just very, like, it's very smart, and it's very complex, but it's like, you gotta have, like, a flow chart, like, to follow, like, everything that's going on. It's like Game of Thrones. Like, you gotta, like, know all like, moves. This one, it's exactly the right development, and it's boiled down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it goes through, you go through these different channels of like who in the CIA or FBI or whoever is pulling the strings, and you think you know at a few different moments, but I just love how simple it turns out to be. It turns out to be exactly what you'd think. It's like, it's our own government being kind of shitty behind our backs. Right. Like, it's not the most shocking thing in the world. It's just, it's a story we've heard before, but it's real. And it's a very 70s thing too. I feel like a lot of the thrillers then were like, what's really going on? What's our government really doing?
You know, it's interesting. Like, the tone of movies have changed. Like, we'll get some movies that have this as a theme, but so many movies now, it's like all the espionage is justified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that's done, it's for your freedom and it's for safety.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah, sure.
These bad people that want to kill you.
And I'm sure that stuff,
that exists, but this is like,
you don't know, right?
Yeah, and it's almost like it, like they predict like the Gulf War in a sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yep.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this feels like when you get the big reveal of what's really going on, it suddenly, like, I had to double check. I was like, wait, when was this made?
Because
it feels like it was later. It feels like it knew what was coming.
But then on the other side, what's cool about too is that there's a moment near the end where it's kind of like a Few Good Men moment where, like, you're all kind of feeling righteous about, like, being on Robert Redford's side. And then this guy, the guy who's not really his enemy, he's kind of his frenemy.
Cliff Robertson, right?
Yeah, it's his Higgins, frenemy. And he's like, he gives him this speech about, like, you hate the way we're doing this, but this is the thing that's keeping us safe. And if we didn't do it, every American people will be demanding it. And you're like, well, he's right, too.
He's not wrong. When he's like, if there's an oil shortage, and then next comes a food shortage, and next...
They don't care how we do it. They just want us to go and get it.
Get our shit back. Yeah, get us what we need. And he's not wrong about that, either. And this is like... This is a time, I think, where the 70s feel like, you know, post-Vietnam, where everybody was distrustful of the government. Yes, we're like, what are your real intentions? And this, I feel like this kind of sets off a chain of similar thrillers that maybe I didn't realize before because I hadn't seen this. But I was like, oh, this kind of feels like the beginning of what the government spy thriller became.
Well, there was, of course, there was 4 days of the Condor and then 5 days. And then
I loved...
2 day, 2 Condor.
I loved at the beginning when you could see in the credits it's based on the novel 6 days of the Condor, and Hollywood was like, get the fuck out of here. We're going to do 3. That's too many days.
That was just their agent. Like, they got 50% of it.
We're going to compress it down. I'll take 3 of those days.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a very Hollywood thing, but I do like, I think the short that you're following along with them in real time of like, it's, it is 3 days. It really, it works. It makes it feel you feel the urgency of it a bit more, I think.
And, you know, it's interesting. His character, like, they do a great job, and not it's not too cheesy. It skirts the line, but I don't think it's too cheesy of showing you how smart he is, how observant.
It's going to rain at 10:30 today.
It's going to rain.
Yeah. Oh, you're that guy. Cool.
But you forgot an umbrella.
Yeah, right. It was an ice bullet. What? You know what I mean?
I mean, let's be real. They open up with Robert Redford riding a bicycle in rush hour traffic. And I was like, that man is not riding a bicycle to work. Look at him. He's beautiful.
Absolutely. Right. And so they do a good job of that. So,
He's good at some things, but he's not that good. And he's kind of good. And I like how his skills kind of kick in later. Like,
yeah. Well, you see, eventually he...
And he's read so many books.
He's so intelligent he understands. He's logical. Everything he's doing is very logical.
But also
intuitive.
Like, he also picks up.
Yes. And I mean, like, that's why the assassin, Joubert, Max von Sydow, insinuates, like, you should do what I do. Because you need to get out of here, probably, and you'd be really good at it. You get it,
right?
Like, you figured out how to survive.
Did you notice, like, for example, like when he's at the woman's house and that mailman guy comes, and we all know that mailman guy is he's
took him a while to figure that out.
No, but he just looks at his
shoes, boots,
his shoes, and he sees it, and it's snowing, and you guys have ever been in New York, you know, like it's like that shitty gray snow, that's disgusting. Right. It's like nuclear sludge.
Yeah.
So he looks at the guy's shoes. He sees it there. This guy pretends to be a mailman. It's actually a hitman.
Yeah.
It's not a spoiler because you know this in the movie at this point already.
Yeah.
He sees his shoes are like squeaky clean, and immediately he like leaps into action. And I feel like nowadays they would make a whole big deal out of that, like, or something like that. And it's just like a quick, like, Sherlock Holmes thing where it's like he uses an intuition and he leaps into action. And that's really like neat to see.
I feel like that's really the moment of the movie where he turns, because you see in that scene the fact that he lets him in and isn't immediately suspicious and paranoid, it speaks to he's a normal guy,
right?
And he's not and he's maybe a little off his game, and he just doesn't think about it. He's like, I don't know, the guy's got a package, whatever. But then as soon as he sees his shoes, that switch flips, and he knows who he is. And from then on in the movie, he is, I think, much more decisive and much more rightfully paranoid.
And that bothered me a little, that he wasn't instantly, you know, suspicious, but at the same time...
Like, yeah, come back with that package.
He doesn't know that the guy saw his license plate. So he doesn't know... Like, he didn't know that they knew the car. And
yeah, as far as he knew, that no one had any idea where he was. He grabbed some random woman. Right. You know,
But here's the thing. I'm sorry.
That's a whole topic, too.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Quick, grab the first random gorgeous woman you see.
But the thing is, like, I get he's super smart, and so he basically can, like, see through this woman, and whatever poor guy she's dating, that guy doesn't stand a chance. He's not as handsome. He doesn't know anything. Like, he's, you know, like, Robert Redford's like, oh, these were all done in November. And you can see she's like, she's just buckling at the knees.
Right.
And it's true.
And it's like, that part was, like, a little Hollywood, but at the same time, I wanted them to bone, so, you know, I was okay with it.
That's the one I just did not like that about the whole movie at all.
Yeah, it was
like,
a little...
I mean, that
the whole relationship was just cheesy.
That felt dated.
Really uncomfortable, honestly, in a couple of places.
Yeah. It felt like I could sort of get on board with... She clearly wasn't happy with who she was with.
Yeah.
And was probably too smart for him. And this guy got it. But this guy still just took you at gunpoint.
He said...
The fact that they sleep together...
And she's
well, the night is young, she said.
I know.
I love that he immediately goes, did I rape you? I would have been like, whoa, buddy. Where did rape come from? What are we doing? Yeah. Well, you brought that up. That makes me uncomfortable. But it is such a, like... it's such a spy movie moment of, like, the woman who... by no rational right should sleep with this man is gonna sleep with this man. It's a James Bond thing.
I didn't care. They didn't do it in a very, like, convincing way. Like, I feel like if they'd been, I literally thought, like, my wife's a writer too. And of course we pick everything apart as we watch.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I would love to have that.
No. We're super annoying.
It's a vicious cycle. We can't get out of.
And we were saying, like, let's say the mailman thing had happened. while they were there, if they'd both been attacked, then suddenly they're in the trenches together. They've got something to bond. And then maybe there's that kind of like passion of we could have died.
Because they slept together before that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If that had happened, I would feel like they were on the same page. It happens pretty early in the movie.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It does happen at a strange time. Like you could totally understand even if it happened right after that mailman scene, because it's like the tension's up and everybody, you've just been through some shit.
They go through that. He's like, you're okay. You're okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be okay. Like then I could see them falling.
Sure. But no, the night before they just bone down. And then they have the very like awkward morning after moments where they're like sort of coupley for a minute. It's odd.
But in the very beginning though too, she kept saying, you know, you have some great qualities.
Oh yeah, yeah. She keeps dropping hints.
Easy.
She's like, you're a lovely man to be around. Like, what is? We know where this is headed. Right.
Yeah,
that's in his Tinder profiles. Like, yeah, you know, lovely man, good with photography, carries a gun. You know. And the other thing is too is like, you know, she's an artist. Like, she's sort of like, she gets into this whole spy groove, which is fun. It's fun that she becomes an accomplice. She seems to be suddenly she's a great spy. By the way, also like she's really great when she goes to the CIA. Like, I sort of felt like if she was, like, in a really boring life where she was, like, buttoned down and she had to work in a boring office and this was her chance at adventure, but she's, like, a freewheeling New York...
That's a great point, but maybe they made her that way because they thought that person would get on board.
Maybe more romantic. Than... Yeah, maybe that's a good point, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think also by law in the 70s, every single woman had to be a photographer.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. They all had to have cool... There's like three different cool jobs that they could have. It's such a movie character.
It really is.
But I think because I enjoyed the rest of it so much, I kind of went along with that.
It was definitely like the one like flying the ointment.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. And it is like... It's so goofy and ridiculous that they sleep together, but you're also like you want it to, you know, it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
like,
I just want it to be later. You know,
yes,
I'm a gentleman.
You're
I'm
right. A gentleman spy. let's do it on the second day of the Condor, exactly. At least, not the first night. It is. I mean, that's a little quick to get caught up in the what is that? Is that Nightingale syndrome? What is it? When
no, Stockholm.
Not Nightingale. Stockholm.
That was
Stockholm.
Her like secret name or something, wasn't it, or something like that.
Her it name was Sparrowhawk, yeah. I think. Sparrowhawk, right? Which was a little bit, I was like, that's a little bit of a shot, Robert Redford. You gave her Sparrowhawk. You couldn't give her a more badass bird. Right, you gave her the one that hunts sparrows.
Exactly.
Although he's the Condor, I don't know. It's a little goofy. But this, I mean, I don't know. This whole thing feels like it's completely character driven. Mm-hmm. It's like that perfect kind of 70s movie that still holds up because it's just an engaging, very contained story that beginning, middle, end, and it gives you that little reveal at the end, which doesn't, it's not crazy. It's about oil. It's not unheard of. And then he tells the newspaper, it's not something we hadn't seen, but it was just enough.
Well, it's a little ambiguous at the end too. Like he says, like, are they going to print it? I don't know if they're going to print it. Like, and it's, they leave it open.
Like, yeah. I mean, you also don't know if he's like, even if they do print it, is he in danger still? I mean,
I also thought maybe he was bluffing. Like it's entirely possible he didn't.
That he didn't even bring the story. Yeah. He just doesn't want to get murdered.
They don't show you that at all. They just have him say it and he says a lot of things and he's in the spy game. So I like that it's like a discussion point. Like it's not a.
Right. I love the moment. I like that that turn with the hitman and him at the end. When the guy who's been trying to kill you is just like, no, I don't have a problem with you anymore. Like
somebody else paid me more to kill him, and he had paid me to kill you, so that's off. Like it's very businesslike.
It was such a great moment, but it's, at the same time, you just think like, I would be like, no, I'm good. No, thank you for all the advice.
I don't need a ride.
Job counselor.
I'm not taking a ride from you. You if someone were to offer you money right now, you would be trying to kill me again.
But isn't that great, too, is that he's like this scary ass, like chill... You know, this chill as fuck like hitman, and then he's got this entirely human side to him at the end.
Oh, that's such an unexpected, strange turn where he winds up riding in a car with the guy who was trying to kill him a half hour ago in the movie. Right. Like it's, and I love the interaction they had when they were in the elevator together. That whole scene was so great.
That was so great too.
And it was sort of like part of me was like, why wouldn't he just kill him? But this guy does things his way, and he's meticulous, and then he immediately...
He doesn't know when the elevator door opens,
sure,
he's going to be there.
But immediately, like, it feels like maybe in the modern version of this movie, things are handled less delicately. This guy
nowadays,
is just such a calculated...
punch him into the elevator wall.
Exactly.
Like, there's blood everywhere.
Yeah,
huge, like, parkour.
But he, like, goes outside, sets up a rifle, and then Robert Redford is smart enough to bring everybody out, endangering all their lives with him.
He surrounds himself with 70s stereotypes, which I always recommend that.
Yeah. He's like, are you cool cats doing anything? Yeah. Can you help me out?
We need a beatnik. We need a hippie chick. We need like a...
And you know, I like the, how they glaze over within a story how he kind of glosses over the fact he has sex with her and with Dunaway, right? And then she's like, "Who's this Janice?" And he's like, "Oh, just a friend. It's not like my girlfriend who was murdered yesterday."
Yesterday, right. This cold-blooded motherfucker. A woman could never get away with that in the movie. Like where her boyfriend gets murdered that day, she bones somebody that night. That's a little sociopathic.
Well, they're both swinging, really. I mean, she's got a boyfriend too.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. He's like, "Look, it's the 70s.
And it
she's
could be dead. A stress-related thing."
But he lies. He doesn't say my girlfriend.
Right.
So he's still even
in. He kind of intimates it, no?
But like, to me, it was like to not explicitly say she was my girlfriend who was just murdered this morning is a little bit like, well, I'm grieving, but I'm still trying to fuck. Like I'm still trying to make this happen.
Yeah, cause like if they started like if say they started dating and then it was she found out who Janice really was, she was like, that was your girlfriend?
It was that day?
Like, he's like, yeah, I told you she's my friend.
Exactly. Like, he's just a little bit, like, ambiguous about it. So he's like, oh, I don't want to shut this down. I feel like this is going to happen. It's watching his reaction from, like, when he comes back to the office and finds everybody is like, he is in this panic state of, like, everyone he knows, he just saw them 10 minutes ago. They're all dead. And then he immediately has to go into self-preservation mode and like turn off that there is no time to grieve.
Absolutely.
He just has to go. And so I feel like he kind of shuts it down. Yeah.
And I love when he goes to his friend's house who they set up earlier. They were going to have dinner with. I actually watched the first 10 minutes again. And he doesn't tell his friend's wife.
She doesn't know yet, right?
Yeah,
but he hugs her really hard.
Yeah, that's a great
moment.
He
scares her and then sends her off with no information.
And he doesn't tell her why he's being all creepy and sending her off and like
scaring. Go upstairs. He said he just sends her upstairs. Doesn't tell her anything. Yeah. Doesn't be like, hey, by the way, your husband got shot in the throat.
That, like, I was thinking about this when you said it was in real time, like comparing this to like say 24. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jack Bauer would like recap the plot. He's like, there's been a murder. There's been a murder. There's no time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no time. Why are you explaining everything again?
Right.
But he doesn't do it. And we're all kind of like wanting, and you kind of want him to explain stuff more often. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm kind of like, why is he being so creepy to Faye Dunaway without just telling her there's this stuff going on? I need to hide out. You know, I'm on the right side of the government. People trying to kill me, whatever. Like, he never even like takes 1 minute to explain anything. He just goes like, "I don't know what's happening. Get down. Be quiet."
But and there's also though, like in that scene, so he doesn't tell the guy's wife that her husband is dead and she's in a lot of danger. But it's also like, I think, man, he's just like, I don't have time. I don't have time for this. You gotta fucking go. Oh, I'm turning off your oven and fucking...
Right. He goes and turns off the stove. How great is that in terms of like a grounded move?
Yes. I don't know what this says about me. It kind of feels lame, but I immediately was like, he's going to turn off the stove, right? Like, because she's thinking, in the middle of cooking dinner. Thinking, this whole place is going to burn down.
He's not going to do it because it's going to be a movie. They're just going to slip right past that. And I'm my wife and I are going to laugh about how the place would have burned down.
Anyway. Yes,
they actually do that.
Which yes, totally it's cool. Like, well, all right, this guy gets it.
Their business.
Yeah, yeah, and that is that. It's just little touches like that that show you that like this guy thinks of everything.
Right.
So he knows, all right, I don't have time to explain to her what happened. I certainly can't tell her really husband's dead. And that's going to, she's going to freak out. I got to get her out. I got to do what I got to do and get out of the building.
Yeah, I just had a thought. It's almost like this movie was redone as a TV show called Psych.
Is that what Psych is?
Well, Psych is, I love Psych. Yeah, it's like this guy who they think is psychic, but he's really observant.
He's just intelligent.
Well, he can like read things from far away, so he tells you all these things, but he's
like he can read body language and that.
Yeah, and like he'll read something in your wallet or just all these things that make him seem.
He just has good eyesight.
Is good that eyesight. That's and like, also super observant. Like,
yeah.
You know, just because his father was a police officer. It's jokey though, but De Niro, his character is very much like that. He just they give you enough where it all seems natural. It seems like this is who he was from the very beginning.
Well, this guy's meticulous nature, like his job is to literally pore over books and journals and everything just for any kind of indication of hidden code. Like it's he requires such a level of observance that you buy that even though he's not the gun-toting CIA agent, that he would probably find a way to get through this.
Right. But it seems like it's always at work. You just don't You just don't want to bring anything to your boss's attention, you know? That's every movie, like, not every, but that's a big thing in movies. Like,
dude, as soon as he says to his boss, like, well, did you get that report? And the boss dismisses it. I was like, that's the thing that gets them all killed for sure. Yeah, like, that's whatever this thing is that he thinks he found it. Right. And it is, it's such a classic. That is another, like, it's such a movie setup of, like, as soon as the boss blows him off, you know. You're like, yep, you're doomed.
That's true.
Let's get into these games while we have a little bit of time left. Let's make a drinking game out of this movie. So every time something repetitive happens, you have to take a drink. What do you think, Dwayne?
Well, we actually, because we did sneakers last week, this issue came up. But for me, every time you wonder why Redford's character doesn't put on a hat.
Because he's not conspicuous.
He's wanted, right? He doesn't know who's out to kill him, who's not out to kill him. You really should dye your hair instantly, actually.
Yes.
But okay, sunglasses, you know. Short of that, put a hat on, dude.
Blonde man with beautiful hair stands out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
As soon as he's out on the street, like, he puts his collar up and does the shoulder shrug thing. Like, what are you hiding?
Right, he's the perfect disguise.
For me, it's every time they cut back to that, like, Illuminati-like situation room. I loved all of those ominous old white characters in that room. It was very one of them was British, and I was like, "What is he even doing there?" But he just felt
John
evil.
Houseman, you know, from the paper chase was.
Yeah, he just felt
they
so
earn it.
Yeah, exactly right. You can't stop thinking about that. Yeah.
Rob, what do you think, man? Drinking game.
I thought it was like every time he peers around a corner before he goes around it. It was a little hard because the movie is not repetitive. It doesn't go through a lot of the same ticks because it keeps changing the game over and over again. So I was having a little trouble with this one, but like, he's always peering around the corner before he like goes through it, which is like,
A lot of looking over your shoulder, peering out through blinds, like a lot of that. I love it. Let's come up with a new Oscars category for this movie. So if it was nominated in a category that it would definitely win, what would that be? We kind of touched on the sex scene. For me, the new Oscar category would be most little kisses in a sex scene. It was fucking weird. I don't know if Sydney Pollack was like, just do a bunch of little kisses all over her face like you've never kissed a person. And you, it was like watching an adult do the doggy paddle. I was like, what is this choice?
Pretend like you're
very
a pug
strange.
And she just ate a steak.
Yes, exactly. Dwayne, what do you think, man? What's your new category?
I would say best achievement and product placement of a pea coat. He doesn't come to work with that coat on, and at some point he has his pea coat on, and then he's just a pea coat guy, which, if it's cold enough to wear a pea coat, it's cold enough to wear a hat.
Redford's got a strong coat game. I feel like he's a good coat wearer. You put him in a varsity jacket, he pulls it off.
There's something about hair
because, like, first of all, if you guys noticed, like, they had these, like, 70s credits where they put all this stuff up front.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't as bad as the 50s where there's, like, 10 minutes of credits before you see the movie.
Right. Yeah.
And then at the end, it's a Technicolor production.
Yeah, exactly.
I could have waited for that. But they put a lot of credits at the front, and, like, I remember, like, there's a whole page of them, a whole screen of them, which is like Miss Dunaway's hair, Miss Dunaway's makeup.
Miss Dunaway's clothes.
And for her and for Redford, like the hair, like the hat point you're making is like, you've got Robert Redford, you're not going to cover that.
No, that's the moneymaker.
But like also like, I remember like one scene is like when Dunaway is driving, when she's the getaway car after they've been through all this stuff, like she's got her woolen cap on and her hair is still perfect. And my wife is like, okay, she just went to the stylist before that scene. Like,
it's
like clearly like the 70s beautiful hair. It's like one of the stars of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What's your new Oscars category?
I think it's best use of handsomeness to avoid questions.
Yes,
because like every single conversation he has with someone, like it's just he's so handsome, like they just like stop asking questions after a while.
Yeah, yeah,
there's this aura around him.
Yeah, you feel that with the moment of the kidnapping. Like he's very quickly able to assure her, like, I'm not going to hurt you. You just got to do what I say. And you see her just kind of drop her defenses.
She has very
and she's
few
like,
questions.
Even she's the moment just like, when he's like, he's hot. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to lay in his bed. If you move, I'll know it.
I'm going to forcefully spoon you right now. Right. Which was, although I have to say, like, it was as creepy as it was also like, that's really fucking smart. He's like, I have to sleep. I'm not thinking straight.
That's the other thing.
That's
it's
so
not like,
rational
it's not like
and logical.
Too. It's like that. Jack Bauer never takes a dump.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, he just never has any human needs. Right. If it was me, I'd be like, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
I got to take a nap. I need a power nap.
Yeah. Just the fact that he admitted that he has to take a nap is just one of those.
And that's such a, again, just speaks to like how logical the character is. He's I'm not thinking straight.
You hate that he's holding a gun there and like holding you in this creepy, like quasi rape thing. You'd be like, if you're in that situation, you have to do that. Like, he would have to do that. And maybe she understands that or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he doesn't want to tie, at least then, he doesn't want to tie her up. He doesn't want to, like, tie her up and leave her chained to, like, a radiator. And says, right, you know, right. So it's like, he's sort of doing the humane thing, but it's also like, man, who would even think to do that? Like, I'm going to embrace you while I nap so you don't fucking move.
But isn't it great, how her feelings get hurt when he says, hey, when you go up to Vermont, just don't tell anyone. Like, and she's like, hey, we bonded. I'm not going to tell anyone. And he's like, of course, I'm sorry. Hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I put a gun on you. And I thought maybe, anyway. So.
I broke a lot of laws, and you could very easily tell everyone I'd be in a lot of trouble.
We had some good times.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, we're cool. Let's rename this.
It's like Winter Lovin', like from Greece. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they had this fleeting affair.
Yeah.
Let's rename this movie, The 3 Days of the Condor. First of all, that's a fucking great book. The book is 6 Days of the Condor, but man, like, just spy movie. This has always interested me purely on title. Like, I didn't really know the plot, but it was always like, that's one of those older movies I gotta check out.
Is it Flight of the Condor? Is that from his Flight of the Jackal, right? Or something? Bird related.
There's another Condor spy movie, and I can't think of it. And there's also like, there's 3 Days to Kill. Famous spy thriller. But I mean, this is a great title, but let's come up with a new one. What do you think, Dwayne?
I'd say Don't Shoot the Reader.
Oh, by the way, we haven't acknowledged, like, obviously, you know, the idea is that the government's doing some shit we don't know about, but this is vicious on a level of like, oh, they found out we might be doing something, let's murder a bunch of readers.
And they
god,
and they shoot it down. Like, the boss is like, it's nothing, so
just let it get shut down.
Yeah.
Or just kill him. I mean, killing everyone in the office is extreme. It's rough.
It's the New York Literary Historical Society, so like, that's going to stand out like a sore thumb. Like, people are going to know when the Literary Historical Society is gone. Like,
Yeah. Whatever happened to those people? For me, it is the new name is The Smooth Game of the Condor, because the fact that Robert Redford still manages to bed down his kidnapping victim just speaks volumes to, like, this guy's got it. He's smooth. Yeah,
and he was the only one. There was one girl at the office that really was worth making moves on, and he was the one that had her.
He locked her down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had her down.
Rob, what do you think,
he
man?
He was the last man to touch her. Right. Well, mine's kind of like yours. It's I call it the sweet gaze of the blonde nerd.
Right. There's no
that look he gives, that smoldering Redford look. You know, like in that meme, remember that meme people thought was Galifianakis a couple of like last week or something? That Redford, I don't know what movie that's from, but that Redford gives you that look, and it just like melts you. Like, me, I'm a straight dude who's married to a woman. But
it's
like,
still, well, he's just.
I'll let him put a gun up to me and spoon with me.
He can forcefully nap next to me.
Right.
What's your favorite moment of this movie and why? This is a tough one for me, but I think, in the end, it was the fight with the mailman, because it felt like that's where he turned. And it was also like a surprisingly well choreographed fight.
Yeah. And it's realistic, though. It's not
It was like, for a 70s movie, I expected a little bit of a hokier, more clearly choreographed fight. But this was like a lot of like rug pulling and shoving and just trying to survive kind of fight.
You know what's great about that, too, again, back to the realism thing, is they have this whole thing set up. And you know, because Faye Dunaway's in the other room, he's told her to hide. You know, you're just waiting for it, where he's going to get like, the guy's choking him, and she's going to come out with like a lamp and smash it over the guy's head and save him. Like, okay. Instead, she comes out with some like, was it just some piece of furniture, just some like thing she picks up? She tries to hit the guy, and it doesn't work. The guy's a trained killer.
Right, no, he just like tosses her aside,
and they keep fighting. And it's not that I want the woman to not like be heroic, but it's like, that's the realistic thing. She wasn't a trained fighter. These guys are both from the military. And that's just how it would happen.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Dwayne, what do you think, man? Favorite moment?
So many moments. I think we talked about it. I would have to say the whole thing with the... it's either when he describes the hitman, and he's like, just something great about saying, oh, like, not only maybe he has a German accent, but like where in Germany?
Oh yeah, Alsace Lorraine.
Yeah, like yeah, that's yeah, just, yeah. That's outrageous. But I think that the turn at the end, because what happened was you think that the hitman is going to take his gun, shoot the guy, and try to frame him or something like that. But he shoots him with his own gun, puts it in his hand, and then he's like, yeah, we're done here.
And that gives him his gun back, right?
Yeah, that moment is so crazy.
You're not expecting, because that feels like a moment you've seen in a lot of spy movies where the guy shows up and it's the most inopportune moment. He's got his gun on him, and you figure he's going to get away in some cheesy way.
Right.
And it's just like, we're good. This transaction is closed.
Oh, I have a question for you guys. Can I just put before I answer?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
So if you think back about 5 minutes before that scene, when they're talking to Higgins about, and they said, like, we just caught him at New York City Center or whatever like that. Now, you know what has to be done, don't you? You're going to be okay with this. You know how things go with the CIA. Like, you know that Higgins, the frenemy, is going to have some tough decision.
Yeah.
What did you guys think that meant at that time? Because I think it's confusing on purpose.
I thought, it's a great question. I thought that they were going to catch the German hitman guy, and they would probably have to let him go.
Something like
let him go because
just let him go.
It's bigger than you. It's above your pay grade.
Yeah, it definitely felt like. I mean, to me, it was this vague notion of like, morally, you're gonna have to bend here. Right. We're gonna do some things to wrap this scenario up that you are not gonna like, because they do give him like as much as he's the one in the end who. He's there, you know, trying to explain to Redford why they do what they do, and it feels a little evil, but it also feels rational. But he's given, like, he's a decent guy, it seems like, throughout.
He has a moral compass of a sort.
Yes, something. Yeah, compared to, like, the evil men in the room who are,
and
like...
And you see that he's been shifting towards Redford's point of view, so you wonder, like, how far he's gone, and if he's really... Because you don't know at that point, he hasn't made that speech yet. You don't know that he's still on the same side he was before.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to switch sides and, like, take Redford's side. You don't know where he is.
Yeah, but I don't know. I didn't know if it was like them saying we're gonna kill this guy anyway. Like we're gonna have to get rid of him. I don't know.
And you can maybe even think that they've caught Redford and we don't know it yet. It's because then we see Redford pop up in this surprising place. Like I think it's this genius piece of like ambiguity where like you don't know what it is and you're totally confused about it. And then like you figure out that it's like they've caught the hitman and they're gonna hire him to kill the deputy director in Virginia.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. But you had no idea. And that would have been a problem for Higgins, too. It's like, we're going to kill our deputy director.
That's crazy.
We're just doing that now.
This is how we're solving problems. This guy's in embarrassment, so we're going to stage his suicide.
Right. So it just kind of all adds up, but like you're just wondering what's... It's a great like mini suspense moment.
Yeah, it's a really good point that you bring up in general of how this movie feels to the audience is you are lost for a lot of it. You're as panicked as he is, and you don't understand really what's going on until the very end.
So I have to say my favorite moment. I'm such a nerd. But I kind of love the scene in the telephone, whatever you call it, the switchboard.
Oh, that was a dope scene. Absolutely.
That's such spy movie stuff.
But it's like, I love that it's 70s technology spy.
Yeah. He's at an actual switchboard.
Right. And he hacks the guys in the guy's phone. He gets him to make another phone call. He records that. He plays
that
it back
was
to
pretty
computer.
Dope.
Oh, my God.
That's what you can see. He's like, it's almost like, maybe I was awake during spy class. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, he, like, well, man. Yeah, you see that he had that communications background in the military, and that's the perfect way to be like, well, he wasn't a combat guy,
right,
but he's
right.
he obtained some very usable skills. And I love,
he just knew to do all that, right?
Yeah. I love how practical it is, too, how all of it is like, before everything went digital, this is when like being a spy was very, this is so hands-on. This is a switchboard. Like it's physics. Funny to think of now.
I do also love in the 70s tech. I do also love like when the guy comes in from Washington, I think it's Wicks, and he gets off the plane and somebody is there at the helicopter and hands him a piece of paper with the latest news. Like,
yeah.
Right.
I guess that's the way that urgent things were. Like he would have gotten a beep on his phone before he even left Washington.
Yeah. 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 Hilarious. Let's cast the modern remake of this movie. So I guess apparently they did or are going to do a TV show just called Condor.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Three seasons of the Condor?
Yeah, yes. The three to five, depending on how it does, right. Seasons of the Condor. But let's cast the modern remake. Let's redo this movie. What do you think, Dwayne?
Okay, just the major characters I recast. For Turner, for Robert Redford's character, I'm thinking Bill Hader. Hmm. Not as dreamy, but I think he could do a great job.
He's been crushing it in Barry.
I love Barry.
Barry's amazing.
Barry's dope. The German hitman, Christoph Waltz.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a, he'd kill it.
And then the, she's not a major character, but I hated to see her leave. The Asian hottie is my friend Lisa LaPera.
Okay.
She's on TV shows and she's in Fast and Furious, except she lives for sure.
Janice is back. Knocks on the door right mid-bone.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
I thought we were friends.
Then she gets in on it.
Tell him, Joe. Yeah. That's right.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's how it would go if it was Redford. I don't know if Bill Hader's pulling that off.
That's the threesome of the condom.
Yes.
Very different.
And Faye Dunaway is Lily James. She's from... Downton Abbey. Mm-hmm. Also, the young girl who she gets married at the end, but she dates a black guy briefly, and she's also in Yesterday.
The flapper one.
Yeah.
That's
I forget her. I'm forgetting her Downton
Rose.
Name.
Rose.
That's it. Rose. That's it. Rose. Yeah. Really excited about that movie, by the way. Also, and Higgins would be Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Yeah, just old likable Paul Rudd.
Right.
I like it.
Because he's just like, he doesn't really know what's happening. He's, you know.
He's like, I'm just trying to be a good guy.
Right.
Cliff Robertson, by the way, fucking great in this movie.
Absolutely.
And I kept trying to think, I'm like, why do I know him? I definitely saw him in something as an old man. He was Uncle Ben in the first Spider-Man. But I mean, he popped up in so many great 70s movies. For me, Condor, Turner, I want to see Jake Gyllenhaal. Because I love,
I thought of that too.
I love a twitchy, paranoid Gyllenhaal, like looking over his shoulder at all times, freaking out. He's very good at that sort of thing. Elizabeth Olsen in Faye Dunaway's role, she's smart, could play the kind of brooding photographer, but also can kick a little ass. Michael Keaton as Higgins, the CIA agent.
I like that.
Because I fucking love Michael Keaton in anything, and I will watch him. And then Joubert, I want to see Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah,
it's just this like just the quiet intimidation. I love him.
Yeah, that's a
I
good
love
call.
How Max von Sydow plays it. So quiet, it's really fun. Rob, close it out for us.
I came up with some more punkish ones than that.
All right, let's do it.
I was meaning more silly, but I was imagining Owen Wilson as Turner.
He's got the hair.
He's got the blonde, dreamy thing, but he's also kind of vaguely unsettling, and you don't know why. He's kind of weird, but he's
wild-eyed
into him. Yeah, wild-eyed. And the crazy one is I thought for the Faye Dunaway character is, what if you just threw in Amy Schumer just to like throw all the feminism right back at him? She's like, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah,
this is full of like annoying questions. Like, it was more like my wish of phone was like how I wish the character had spoken up, but like, would not go quietly long. But then she would kick ass when it was time to do it. I didn't really have those guys are so good.
Bring them back.
I can just reanimate them.
CGI.
Reanimate. Oh.
I like
Max von Sydow, is he dead?
I don't know if he is or not.
I assume.
I think Greg Kinnear actually could be good as Higgins because he has so much like he's just always kind of worried and you never know what he's thinking and his eyes are just really expressive and all that.
Yeah, yeah. He's great for the character too, where you're like, it wouldn't shock me if he was bad. But he seems to care. Like, he seems to have a moral compass. He's definitely that type of guy. I like that. That about does it, I think. That is it for this week.
Yeah.
Rob, thanks so much for being here, man.
Thanks. This is fun.
Tell everybody where to find you online, all that sort of stuff, your stuff to look out for coming up.
So you can check out my mini things I've done outside of late night. I have a comic book that I'm selling right now. It's actually kind of a sci-fi political thriller as well, but with a lot of comedy as well, called Shrinkage. And you can buy it from my website at robkuttner.com.
Oh, cool, man.
And then I have some other stuff I've done you can check out. And then you can follow my tweets at Apocalypse Howe. This show is called Gander that I'm working on now. And that's going to come out, I think a month after this, podcast. So
awesome.
Maybe you guys can put it on the show page or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. We'll tag it and stuff. Everybody look out for that Gander on YouTube shortly after this comes out. Dwayne, what's up?
DwaynePerkins.com website. Let's see, Dwayne Perkins on Instagram. And don't forget, if you haven't purchased it, you can get my Zombie Run book, Post-Apocalyptic Love Story, on Amazon. Yes.
Check it out, guys. I am at TK Kelly Comedy on all social media. Check my website and calendar for stand-up dates. Also, follow us at Movie Nightcast on all social media. Keep giving us your feedback. Keep giving us your movie suggestions, especially You know, anything, any just great big movies that we somehow haven't done yet. This is episode 274. We've gotten to a lot of great ones, absolutely. But we also like just recently did The Godfather. So some great ones get forgotten.
Three, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, we started with the best and then we worked our way back to one. But yeah, keep listening, guys. We really appreciate your support. Rob, thanks again for being here, man.
Thanks.
Tune in next week, guys.
You've been listening to Movie Night with Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly. Be sure to like them on Facebook. Just search for Movie Night Podcast Show. And follow them on Twitter. Just search for @MovieNightCast.